Greetings and salutations, everyone. I am AC2GS. My name is Roy, and I'm the net controller for our technical net. It's been going strong for over 45 years now. Every Sunday night is around 8 p.m. We sit in front of our radios, and we chat with each other, and we teach each other, and learn from each other, and hopefully we get entertained by each other. And I thank you once again for joining me this Sunday night for our Easter edition of the Limark Technical Net. Let me drop for a couple of seconds, and I'll come back and tell you the usual link. If you would like to reach me via email, you can use the address mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. If you want to reach Paul, tell him about the space and NASA-related story you'd like him to comment about, you can reach him with the address spacenetreport@gmail.com. We also offer a link page. I cut and paste interesting articles that I've read throughout the week, and I post them for Sunday night so that if you ever have a case of insomnia and you are looking for something interesting to read, consider looking at my link page, and you'll find a few articles that I'm sure will interest you. You get there by typing into your browser, roy.ac2gs.com. We don't have a chat room yet. The old one isn't working right. We have an audio stream of the technical net that I leave open for the rest of the week because a few people asked me to. And so if you are curious of what's going on the Glen Oaks repeater, you don't have a radio on you, you just type into your browser technet.ac2gs.com, and that will bring you an audio stream live from the Glen Oaks repeater. Also, I want to remind everyone that MikeKC2NJI has a great archive site. It's called amateurradio.tv, and it has archives of the Limark Technical Net that go as far back as September of 2006. So avail yourself of the wisdom of people who've moved out of the area and others who unfortunately have become silent keys over the years. There's still a lot of great wisdom in those recordings, so avail yourself of them. Anyway, let me drop for a second, and I will return and tell you what we got planned for tonight. It's going to be a standard operating technical net. I have a couple of short little comments to make about artificial intelligence in the news. This is a subject that we're going to have to live with for the foreseeable future. It's going to have an impact one way or the other, either good, bad, or indifferent. So you might as well be aware of it rather than have it surprise you. So we will tell you a couple of interesting things about AI. Then we will move to the main segment for tonight, the questions, comments, and topics. I'll ask people to hit their push to talk and give me their first name, their call sign, whether it's amateur radio related or just science and technology. I prefer if the first few entries are amateur radio because we are an amateur radio net here. I would also prefer if the first few people who check in and sign in have relatively short questions or comments or topics, as opposed to a list of topics that, might take a half hour plus, because people with short questions and such don't have quite the patience of people with a lot of long questions and such. So keep that in mind when you're checking in. If there's sheer silence, then anyone can check in, but give people a little chance to check in for the simple questions or the short questions as opposed to the multi-part question. So that should take us approximately to 10:15, and Paul WS2N will join us for the SpaceNet report. That should take us in turn to about 11 o'clock, and I will return to tie a bow on everything and wish you well for the coming week. So assuming nothing terrible happens either in the shack or in the repeater, and I don't get kicked off of All-Star too many times tonight, the average is about 1 to 2, that's what we got planned. So drop for a second, and I'll tell you my little stories about artificial intelligence. Okay, Anthropic / Claude apparently, one way or another, released a lot of source code. So if you like to read source code, I understand someone translated it into Python source code. I don't know what the original language for Anthropic is. It's an interesting thing. One wonders why it happened or how it happened, and did Anthropic help it along, hinder it, or what? What's the story behind that? Probably we're going to have to wait for a book or something on the subject. OpenAI apparently has talked enough people into giving them an additional $122 billion in new investments. So they'll probably run through it relatively quickly because they kind of burn money, but at least they have more money and less services. They did away with their graphics AI because it was costing them apparently excessive amount of money, and they didn't think it was worth the trouble. Let's see. As far as OpenAI has a new 5.4 Pro thinking model, Gemini has a new Flashlight 3.1. Apparently, it's about one-eighth of the cost of operating as opposed to Gemini Pro. There was a report out from an investment firm that 50% of the data centers that were announced to be opened sometime this year, over 50% of them are either going to be delayed or have been canceled. So that's not a good thing. And people were kind of optimistic earlier in the week that memory prices, which have been sky high, and some companies just went out of the business of manufacturing memory for PCs in favor of data centers. The memory of prices dropped abruptly without any particular reason. It was theorized that a lot of people who had planned to invest in the memory chips, some of those data centers that I just mentioned that were canceled might have caused the excess number of memory chips and brought the price down. Unfortunately, that seemed to be a rather transient thing. The memory costs are going back up again, so all your PC stuff is going to cost a lot of money. Hard drives are going to get hard to find because data centers use hard drives. Memory, because obviously data centers use a lot of memory. A lot of the things that are important to computers, the graphic processing units in your 3D engines and such, they're all in short supply, and scarcity increases price. So computer equipment is going to get expensive. Even games, old games like Xbox are going up, I think, by $200 just because to replace the old architecture chips is going to cost significantly more because of the scarcity in manufacture. So AI is screwing up a lot of other people secondhand, and everything is still up for grabs. And I guess no one wants to talk about it right now. But as always, I mentioned that a lot of times, although it's not uncommon for AI, people not have much response at the top of the technical net, later on AI eventually works its way into someone's question. So we'll see how it works tonight. On to the main segment, questions, comments, and topics. Again, if you have amateur radio-related topics, I prefer they be at the top of it. And science and technology after the amateur radio questions or comments or topics. And I would prefer the short questions and answers before the long list of questions and answers. So with that understood by everyone, please, if anyone has any questions or comments or topics for tonight, hit that push to talk, give me your first name, your call sign, and what you got. You don't have to give me the question, just if it's science or amateur radio.
Soon after everybody.
Okay, West recognized.
Alan, 32.
Say again, your signal's a bit noisy.
Alan, KE2GGC.
Okay, is it science or amateur radio, Alan?
Sorry, it's an amateur radio question.
Okay, very good. Anyone else want to put their name on the list? Unfortunately, that was 100% noise, so if there was someone trying to capture the repeater and talk to us, either move your antenna closer to the window or raise the power output, whatever you can do to assist the repeater in capturing your signal. A little bit better. It's only about 95% noise. Any way you can kind of clean that up or boost your output or, you know, wiggle the direction of your whip antenna? Oh, well, hopefully a little bit later you'll be able to boost your signal, because I heard a short portion of voice, but the rest of it, again, was the same noise, so... Sometimes that happens. Worst comes to worst, consider EchoLink. We do have an EchoLink for this repeater. We also have an All-Star link. We also have an IRLP link. So there's more than radio waves to get you into the repeater. Anyway, Alan, what can I do you for tonight?
I recently got a Yaesu 510DR. And I want to go start going digital. And my question is PiStar the way to go with that radio?
Well, it sort of depends upon what you want to do. If you want to, some people like the old-fashioned method. They'll go digital with a local repeater and access the long-distance circuits through the repeater, and, you know, that's the way all these things began. Eventually, people figured out to run their own kind of mini repeater, that what we call a hotspot. One of those is PiStar. I'm unfamiliar with that radio. What type of digital format does it use?
I think therein lies part of my question. I know that Yaesu has a proprietary DMR format, which is very similar to P25 Phase 2, which is actually the business that I'm in. And I wanted to have a radio that was going to be compatible, or at least similar to what I'm doing at work for testing purposes.
Okay, as far as I'm aware, the only digital modes that Yaesu offers is their own proprietary Fusion, C4FM mode. It's one of the digital modes. It's not DMR. DMR is out of Motorola and Hytera, and there's a lot of Chinese clone radios that do DMR. But I think that your radio, if it does have a digital mode, the digital mode is most likely fusion. The problem with a very generic PiStar is that PiStars don't do cross transmissions. In other words, it is the only types of digital servers that you can contact directly are associated with fusion technology. There are crossovers that individuals produce. You know, they set up in the back of their shack a little device that goes from, say, a DMR talk group to a fusion room, and vice versa. But the best approach, if you just have a fusion radio, is to get something with a little bit more oomph. There are hotspots that allow you to cross-link yourself. You can use a fusion radio to talk on a DMR gateway, or even a VSTAR gateway. But that's a little bit more expensive. So offhand, unless you have a specific desire to kind of stay completely within the fusion realm, you might consider a slightly more expensive hotspot that's capable of crossing over from one digital mode to another type of digital mode.
Is there a product out there similar to a PiStar that will do both fusion and DMR and do the cross translations between them, so I have multi-mode access?
Yes, there are a few to my knowledge. One is Bridgecom. Bridgecom is a local United States company. It uses a Raspberry Pi as its brain. The other one is in Eastern Europe, and unfortunately I can't remember the name, but it's a little white puck-looking device. It uses a proprietary microprocessor, and it's also able to do translations across the different digital modes. OpenSpot, that one's called OpenSpot.
All right, thank you very much. I will look into both of those and see which one I'm going to play with, or perhaps both of them, and see which one I ultimately like better. But thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it. I do have a DMR, a true DMR handheld, a Chinese version that I was recently given for just doing DMR, but I really want to focus on the Yaesu product.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, again, I don't know if I would say that C4FM is significantly more like the digital mode that you use at work. You know, some aspects are, but other aspects aren't. It's a lot more user friendly, probably the ICOMS type of digital mode. You just enter your call sign into it, and Fusion, you also just enter your call sign into it, and it takes most of the trouble out. DMR is much more problematic because it was never designed for amateur radio itself, so a third party had to maintain a database of unique number identifiers to kind of simulate registrations and such. So, you know, I don't know exactly if I would say that it's that incredibly similar. All the ones that were designed primarily by amateur radio manufacturers tend to kind of be a little bit friendlier to us. We don't have to kind of relearn things because, again, DMR is the least like the other digital modes. You know, because it has its own unique identifier that you can't just type into your DMR radio your call sign and have it register it. It doesn't know what that means at first. You can download the database from the people who maintain the identifiers, and then it will have aliases for your DMR number and what your call sign is, but it doesn't come out of the box like that.
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate it. I'll look into it a little bit further. My background just is, as I said, P25 Phase 2, which is public safety radio. So Fusion seems to be, or DMR seems to be a little bit more like that than Fusion. But Fusion's concept of TDMA is much more similar than anything else in the P25 format. But I'll look into it as I drill down further. Thank you for your time.
Okay, you're welcome, Alan. Good luck, and if you have any further questions, you know where to find us.
K2GGC on the site.
Once again, this is AC2GS. Let me see if anyone has popped up with any further questions tonight. If you have any questions, hit that push to talk and ID yourself. Okay, we may have a relatively short technical net tonight. Not surprising with the fact that it's Easter. Wes, what do you got for us tonight?
Yeah, I'm doing fine. First, before, I didn't send it to you, but before we go to the deeper subjects, I was thinking, what makes ham radio operator? Is it license? Or it's something else? I'm strongly into the knowledge antennas like Dick was, electromagnetic waves, techniques, technologies, and whatsoever. Back to you, and to you.
Well, I mean, you know, amateur radio is different things for different people. And, you know, we just kind of demonstrated that last Sunday when Brian came on, and he really felt that his contesters was kind of taking over the band the other day, and he thought that it was unfair. But, you know, we have contesters, we have DX people, we have people looking for wallpaper, we have microwave, we have low wave, we have graphics, we have data, we have just about everything and anything. So what would make one person a ham might be something that another person would be indifferent to. I talked to someone about slow scan television, which is a fascinating sociological phenomena. The technology has gotten up to at least 30 years old. And if you download the free software and you listen on the frequency, eventually you'll receive these curious copies of Korean War postcards for some reason. So, it's a curiosity. It's of interest to people who like curiosities like me. The average ham, I would assume they would look at it and make some noise and move on to something completely different. So I think our hobby is so wide in scope that the hobby is inherently different things to different people. So it's kind of difficult to fundamentally say this thing is what it is. You know, you could say, well, communicating with other people is what it is. And you'd be partially right. But I know people who, some people are interested in fixing broken radios. And almost as soon as they fix the broken radio, rather than use it for any amount of time, they go looking for another broken radio to fix. So for them, it doesn't appear to be communication. It appears to be the actual electromagnetic field and how the technical aspects of how radios work and how you can solve the logic puzzle of why yours isn't at the moment.
So we have a guy who is glued to his radio. Now this is Dr. Roy. And then he doesn't want to change that radio because he feels he's confident enough, or he feels that he's not going to go to other forms of ham radio because he doesn't need that. Back to you.
Well, you know, I mean, there are versions of that, and there are versions of other things. Some of the higher-end radios, you can pretty much do 95% of ham radio in one form or another. But then, you know, I knew of I considered to be unfortunate people who simply collected Baofeng radios. They never kind of went beyond their technician band allowances, and they never tried anything more sophisticated than a $35 Baofeng. They just kind of added more and more on their belt buckle until eventually their pants fell down.
So in other words, passion and continuous learning are essential to mastering the technical skills, but that's for everybody in every profession. And I'm trying to understand why Dr. Roy is accepting science questions, science subjects. Is it because this is interesting for him, or just because he wants to entertain the audience? Back to you.
Well, like most answers, a little bit of both. I think I know a reasonable amount of general science, and there's only so much amateur radio questions and answers that our present participants tend to give us. And I would like to extend the time period of the net. I mean, sometimes if you cut away all the science and technology and just only work with the pure amateur radio, you can have a whole net in about 20 minutes.
Okay, so if you have a contact on the frequency somewhere between 1.8 to 29 megahertz, which is the most traditional form of ham radio, do you feel like having a voice contact with somebody, and you have subjects with everybody, or it's rather hard for you to find a person you would feel comfortable to talk to? Back to you.
AC2GS. Well, I think maybe I'm just glorifying myself. I think I could somehow chat someone up about a lot of different subjects. Way back at the beginning of my being an amateur radio operator, it was not at all unusual when I was having a QSO with someone that there would be this brief pause in their talking, and I could tell exactly what the next comment was going to be. And the comment seemed to be invariably, I mean, nowadays almost everyone here knows me. I don't get that anymore. But in the early days, it was kind of like, excuse me, what the hell do you do for a living? Because we kind of went from one subject to another subject to another subject to another subject. And some people, I guess, like to play a little game of figuring out what the guy does for a living based on the topics he brings up. And I was apparently bringing up too many topics. So I can keep a conversation relatively going along, unless, you know, I know there are people, you know, we do the little 10-meter net every Sunday morning for another club, and there are a few people from, you know, out of state who just are in it to say hello and then goodbye, and that's fine. Otherwise, I've had conversations for an hour on the 10-meter net, if they were in the mood to chat a while. Thankfully, I don't do small talk very well, so if it's going to be about the delicatessen on the corner that closed down 42 years ago, I'm not the guy for that. But if you, want to talk about other things, I try to be well-versed on a lot of different subjects because I'm just curious about a lot of things.
Okay, so I understand that you have some sort of driving force inside yourself that is always asking for more. Am I correct?
Well, I'm kind of, I'm asking why. I don't know if I would be called asking for more. I mean, one of the typical stories that I overtell far too many times is when I was a young boy and I was walking with my father home from some little trip we took, and I looked up in the sky and I said, "Dad, why the hell is the sky blue?" I think I was something like 7 or 8 years old. Unfortunately, my father was a wonderful guy, but he was a printer, and I don't think he made it through to high school. He had to take care of his family, his brothers and his sisters and his mother and his father, and so he didn't really hit the books quite that much. He kind of responded in a negative way. He said, "Why do you ask such stupid questions?" So, but that's just my nature. I wonder about just about anything that I see. And at first I used to ask everyone, and as time went on, I figured out that probably at that point in time my best source was the library, which was thankfully only about 2 blocks away. So I spent a great deal in the reference section of the library as a child.
Thank you very much for that. And the last part from that would be, I was to describe you as a passionate. You would need to have a strong feelings and strong beliefs, but you are strong skeptic, which I appreciate very much. So, are you passionate?
Not quite what that word is. Are you saying a patriot?
P-A-S-S-I-O-N-A-T-E. Passionate. That's from French.
Am I a passionate? I don't think it translates completely into English. I think I'm hopefully more intellectual than I am emotional, which I would assume a passionate would be someone who is passionate about things and so more emotionally bound to it than intellectually.
Okay. So let's go to the knowledge and to science. I sent you and I sent to Paul email, Nobel Prize winner warned us, this isn't our universe. And it was about the data from Hubble Space Telescope regarding the universe expansion rather than partial. That rate of the data is partially inconsistent with the current standard model of cosmology. And that is for the Hubble tension, persistence discrepancy, and there is something about AI. I'm not sure. The recent AI review of 35 years of Hubble, because it has the access to all of the data, images revealed previously anomalies. So I wonder if you have anything, you and Paul, if you have anything to add to it. Back to you.
No, I don't. I'll leave a little time for students and postdoctoral students and professors to take a good look about it. Usually when these things show themselves, after a few years, they come up with a good reason for the anomaly. They haven't really kind of changed the fundamental laws of physics, probably since Einstein. They tweaked them a little bit, but otherwise not so much. So I'll leave it to them to do what they're paid to do and get their Nobel Prizes. If you want to, you're certainly free to ask the Paul.
Paul, you want to mind? So we have a Hubble tension in question that comes from Hubble Space Telescope data, and it says that constantly indicates the higher expansion rate of the universe compared to prediction derived from cosmic microwave background. So that would be one of the things. And then I go to the next one. Back to you, Paul.
You also had a bunch of texts that came with it, which was very good. Anyway, the one part I liked about it was the James Webb Space Telescope and seeing these bright red dots in the distance. Like at the beginning of time, maybe a billion years away after the Big Bang. And at the time, the theory was only small galaxies would exist, nothing big. But meanwhile, they're looking at it, and they're convinced that these things are gigantic galaxies. So you had one group thinking like that, and then this woman came along, and she said, "Now wait a minute. What this could be is matter is heavier in the beginning of the universe. And this stuff is condensing very quickly, creating friction and sending off, because of the friction, sending off light, tremendous light," which James Webb Space Telescope is looking at this in the same way. And this is a massive galaxy. Meanwhile, what it could be, something small, but something that's just giving off tremendous light, because at the center of these galaxies that we're talking about are black holes, and that's what's pulling everything together. So that was interesting. But the rest of it, I don't know, they really weren't deviating too much from the standard model. Back to you, Wes.
Thank you very much. So we have a Hubble tension, and then we have a persistent discrepancy. And it says that the tension has grown stronger as measurements have become more precise, suggesting that it is not a fluke or a simple error, that's what you mentioned, but potentially crucial oversight in the standard cosmological model. And there was a verification, and that was recent. And it says that while recent James Webb Space Telescope data confirmed the accuracy of Hubble measurements, indicating the discrepancy is not due to instrument error in Hubble, it has sharpened the puzzle leading to discussion that new physics about dark energy may be required. And for those interested with dark energy, I believe Dr. Roy may say a few words about it. It is, so there are two terms. One is dark matter and one is dark energy. So we're actually talking about 70% of total mass energy density is dark energy. So unlike dark matter, which pulls structures together, dark energy pushes them apart. So Dr. Roy, would you mind to comment on it?
AC2GS. Well, I mean, you basically kind of summarized this reasonably well. The farther you get away from the very simple aspects of it, the more confusing, complicating, and unprovable. You know, people are trying to figure out what is the nature of black energy. And unfortunately, physics is rife with really poorly named subjects. When they say black energy, they simply mean that you can't detect it. It doesn't interact in the electromagnetic spectrum. So it's something that the electromagnetic waves just pass by, don't interact, don't bounce off, don't do anything, that seems to possess energy of some kind. Unless, of course, there's something really wonky with our concept of gravity, which could explain some of these things. So, you know, there are people who are making up particles. There are people who are ramming subatomic particles together with other subatomic particles and trying to detect unknown particles that would fulfill some of the qualities of both dark matter and dark energy. But they've come to naught so far. So the physicists are still working stuff out. People are still talking about supersymmetry, although I have my doubts about supersymmetry. People are talking about our incorrect understanding of gravity at extremes. That's the concept of quantum gravity, that, you know, in normal, you know, not too small, not too big gravity tends to settle down to a characteristic that Einstein discussed. But the theory theoretically is that at extremes, you know, of the universe and the extremes of the quantum, that gravity might act in an unusual, bizarre way that might be a solution to our problems with dark energy and dark matter. But this is all conjecture and theory. No one has really progressed in the subject since it was first developed.
Yeah, but you quite often talk about space-time, but at least you mention space-time. Isn't it the dark matter, together with dark energy, is inherent property of space-time, or potentially involving vacuum energy?
Nothing like that's been proven.
So you're denying it, rejecting it, or you rather leaving it on the side?
So far there's no indication one way or the other, so it would be kind of not very clever to just kind of either accept it completely or deny it completely. Again, we don't fundamentally know what these things are. We can describe them the same way that you did at the very opening. But that's about as far as we can go. We can't prove them at all. There's no suggestion. You know, space-time is something that you need kind of clever tricks like gravitational lensing demonstrates the distortion of space-time and such. But, you know, it's not like you can just put a piece of space-time in a lab and poke at it and get some kind of result to prove things. So they're clever experiments, and no one quite knows what dark matter or dark energy is. They know what it does, but they don't know what it is. So without knowing what it is, you can't kind of fabricate it locally and test your theory.
So I'm going to repeat the question again. So we have dark matter and dark energy, and then we have a space-time. And then the question is dark energy and dark matter a property of space-time or potentially involving vacuum energy? Maybe Paul would be able to elaborate on it. Paul, do you mind to take the mic?
That video and included in the written statement. They talked about, in the beginning, they're theorizing that this dark energy appeared and and pushed on everything. And then, for some reason, it just disappeared. It magically disappeared, you know. And then, you know, all I have to hear is that, and then time to go on and do something. But I keep using the word suggest, you know. I need something that doesn't suggest something. I need it to say, you know, this is what we found, and as far as we know, nobody else can say something different. And yet other people are saying things that are different, that the dark energy is still there. So, you know, I'll continue to read those types of things once somebody makes those kind of statements. Something better to back to you, Bear.
With your microphone. Now, George had this problem last week. I don't think it's infectious, though.
That's one virus I don't want to catch.
Yeah, I mean, the only problem is Wesley's not stopping for air. So, you know, there's no way to kind of, unless you call him, there's no way to tell him that we don't know what he's saying.
Does he come through? Is he coming through on Echo Link, or is he?
No. I don't think this is us. I think there's something wrong with his microphone connection.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes, but you were about 30 dB down for the better part of 5 minutes.
Okay. So if it happened again, I'm going to use EchoLink.
Okay.
I'd like to break in, if I can. New guy here, KE2HQF.
Yes.
Yeah, my name's Jeremy. I just put up a new antenna, so I hope you're hearing me okay. Am I coming through okay?
Yes, you're coming through fine.
Great, okay. I just joined the club in the last few weeks, and I've renewed my license, and I'm kind of getting my setup going here slowly, and I was hoping I could find someone who could maybe tutor me a little. I'm kind of looking for an Elmer on something new I'm trying, which is an old tube linear amplifier, which I plan to attach to one of these modern JSU transceivers. And I've got a few questions on how to tune it up and how to operate. And I'm kind of looking for someone who knows this ground who might be able to give me some tips.
Okay. I mean, one of the options I might suggest is the Limark has a forum. I think it's an IO forum. If you're a member, you can join it, and you can send out messages, and because that'll probably get you more club members than the technical net, unfortunately. But I mean, you could call out now, and if anyone has an experience and would like to share it with you, you can either just repeat your email address, and if someone is interested, they'll contact you here. But if you don't get any contacts from here, you might consider joining the forum. I'm sure it's listed on the club's website.
I'll certainly look at the forum, but I'm kind of at this point not looking to discuss it in at great length in this context, but just to put out the word that if there's someone who knows a certain amount about how to operate with an old tube linear and an old, I got a Drake matchbox and so on, and I'd like to figure out how to tune these things properly. But, I could give my email address. It's jyoung4, jyoung4, at, give me a second, sound that. Jyoung4, jyoung4, at optonline.net. And, again, the name is Jeremy, call sign is KE2HQF. And, I'll check in the forum and maybe see if I can find a way to put the question out there and see who can give me some tips on sort of the procedure for using this equipment that I'm trying to get going here without damaging it or myself or others. So I appreciate that.
Okay, Jeremy. Yeah, Paul?
Yeah, Jeremy could also check into the Ignite Nets, the club nets. You get a lot of check-ins there, sometimes it takes them 15, 20 minutes to go through their check-ins. And, you could always say that you have traffic, and, you're looking for somebody to give you a hand with, a tube rig or whatever it is, and, a quick way to get a possible answer to that way. Anyway, back to you, Roy.
Talking about the morning drive net?
No, the regular club net. Every Monday night, although the drive net would be good too, but every Monday night at 8:30 on these repeaters, Rich always comes on. And they always have everything that's happening within the club. I call it the club info net. That's what it is. And that's always followed by Radio Newsline and buying and selling. Swap shop. And then that's followed by Radio Newsline. So Monday night from 8:30 on, you have a good chance of. I got to get somebody.
Okay, I'll see if I can check into the Monday night net at 8:30.
Ed, you wanted to say something?
Rich goes through all the different call letters and you check in and just tell them you have traffic and come back to you. And I've seen people do that quite a bit.
Hey, sounds great.
What would you like to say, Ed?
A word to the wise. These days, all the new internet providers offer 12 volts. The better improved ones won't offer 3,000. If you open that thing up and you don't know what you're doing, it'll kill you. Just a word to the wise.
Yes, indeed, Ed. I agree with you. That's a good, important piece of wisdom. The old vacuum tube linear amplifiers operate on high voltages. I guess you can kill yourself anyway, but with high voltage electricity, it's unfortunately very, very easy. So unless you're familiar with working with high voltage, you should kind of first look up the safety recommendations and probably read them three or four times before you attempt to break open the chassis. Thank you, Ed. That is excellent advice. Look, I know more than a few people, and a lot of them do have vacuum tube linear amplifiers. You know, people have bought their equipment over decades, and so even though solid state is what they're showing these days, there's a lot of people who've had experience. I haven't. My first linear amplifier was solid state. But I'll ask around in addition, and if anyone is inclined, interested, I'll pass along your email address.
Hey, I appreciate that.
Okay, Jeremy, I wish you good luck, and you know where to find us if you need us here, but I understand that it works better if you have a one-to-one relationship with someone who has experience in the field. And like I said, I know guys who actually repair these things, so, you know, if they're so inclined, that would be a great candidate, but I don't want to volunteer other people. So I will ask around.
KF2CC.
Yes, Brian?
Good evening. Just want to let you know I've been listening and want to let you know that I'm here. That's all. Hope everything is well.
Yeah, everything's fine here, Brian. I'll put you on the list, okay?
Sure. Sounds good. Thanks.
Okay. Wes, back to you, I guess.
How am I coming out now?
You're low again. Not as low as you were, but at least a good 12 dB.
Okay, I increased the volume. How is now?
Now it's fine.
Okay. So, I was talking about technology and historically, Russians were trying to steal from us, but the question was, are we so white and innocent and you're so good and so much angels and we don't do that to others. And then I went to the history files and went to 1948 where Russians possessed United States of America from blueprints and technical secrets of Manhattan Project, and a number of people were involved in that and whatsoever. I have all of the lists, and including Robert Oppenheimer as well. But then we have a recent history, which I'm soon going to talk about it, but first, I would love to give my back to you and take your stand on it.
Well, I think a lot of espionage takes place, national espionage and industrial espionage. There are American companies that stole things from other American companies, and stole things from German companies, and you know, everyone tries to get away with it. You know, you prim and proper when someone else gets caught, and then you go back to doing the same thing. It's, you know, it's like anything else. Businesses are not angels, and they want to succeed and make a lot of